This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Of the Chief Information Security Officer, or CISO, has evolved in recent years and became one of the most important job roles within businesses today. Data breaches are coming in thick and fast, and the need for your company CISO to be totally prepared is real. One company that has seen success in this area is AWS, Amazon Web Services. In the next 15 minutes or so, you'll be hearing my conversation with Stephen Schmidt, the Vice President and CISO at AWS. Stephen considers himself a dinosaur in Amazon terms, as he's been with AWS for 11 years now and counting. I had the honor of chatting with him one-on-one during my time at the AWS reInvent 2018 and started by asking him about the changes in the role that he's played over the number of years in service.
So first of all, I think it's interesting to discuss the security organizations within Amazon itself. So Amazon is a family of companies. You know, we've got Amazon the retailer on one side and AWS on the other, and you've got video and games and all sorts of things in various places. And about 8.5 years ago, we realized that we needed to separate the security teams. So Amazon the retailer has their own security team, and AWS has a separate security team. We did that very intentionally because a lot of our customers, AWS's customers, are concerned that nobody outside of AWS has any access to their information. As a result, separated the security teams, and that allows us to focus on our particular areas. Interestingly, we treat Amazon the retailer just like another customer, meaning that they have an account rep, they have salespeople, they have technical account managers, but they also then have the same security relationship that we do with all of our customers, whereas we see what goes on in AWS, and we treat them like a customer, reporting things to them that are necessary, and they can ask us questions like any other customer would, et cetera. My job is to run that security organization. Now, unlike some places, my security organization is not just a compliance and reporting organization. We develop software ourselves and services. So you may have heard from Andy's keynote today that we launched a couple new security and compliance-focused services like Control Tower and Security Hub. Security Hub came out of my team, where we built the infrastructure, the components, the analysis engines, and those sorts of things, coming out of learnings that we had from our own internal work. And that tends to be what we do over time, is we solve a problem for ourselves internally, and we usually have to build our own software to do it, principally because of our scale. You know, you can't take something off the shelf and use it on millions and millions of machines. It doesn't work. So we have to build our own. The second is we want to build all of our features and capabilities multi-tenant natively so that they support the division between customers that ensures that you as one customer have no access to another customer's data and vice versa. So what we do is we take ways of thinking about problems and we take features that we design for our own internal use and constantly ask ourselves the question, should this be externalized? That's actually formally part of our development process. So you may have heard in the Amazon development process that we do things differently than some companies. We start off with a press release and an FAQ. One of the FAQ questions that has to be answered now is, should this internal service be externalized? And it causes people to think about things a little bit differently. Because it means you think about things from a multi-tenant perspective, from a scale perspective that's different. And furthermore, from the perspective of features. You know, what is it that a customer on the outside might need versus just us on the inside? Now, in typical fashion, we prefer to launch fast, which may mean we don't have all the features that somebody wants when we get out the gate, but we really, really desire that customer feedback. You know, what is it they like about the service? What do they want us to improve? What's most important to them next? And so we push really hard to externalize things quickly, get feedback from customers rapidly so that we can iterate quickly on enhancements and changes.
Last year, AWS announced the release of Amazon GuardDuty, an intelligent threat detection service that continuously monitors for malicious and unauthorized behavior to help you protect your accounts. So what were some of the learnings from that launch that we've seen the reason in launching AWS Security Hub and AWS Control Tower?
Yes, so the sort of feedback loop that you see there is when we launched launched GuardDuty, it was because customers told us they wanted to have very good visibility into what was going on from their infrastructure, and they wanted that visibility without agents on the boxes, and they didn't want something interposed in their traffic path. For two reasons. One is availability, number one. But two is they want us to help them secure their workloads without looking at their data itself. And so we built GuardDuty so that it looks from the outside at the customer's infrastructure and the behavior of the customer's infrastructure and helps them understand what's going on. Is it communicating with machines that I know about, or is it communicating with things I don't know about on the internet? Is it participating in a Tor network, or is it participating just with the things on my on-premises infrastructure? Does it look like my machines are Bitcoin mining? Things like that, which are indicia of problems security infrastructure. All of the components in GuardDuty and all of our other security services like MACI or Inspector or WAF, they all generate alerts, findings, which have to be actioned by somebody. Somebody has to do something in response to those findings. And what we heard from customers was they loved the fact that we were telling them about a lot of stuff, but now they needed to know about what was most important. What should I work on first versus what can I wait a little bit? And the biggest reason they told us that was they have a limited security staff. They have a small number of people who can do the security work, so they really need to prioritize that work carefully. That was one of the primary drivers for Security Hub, is we focused a lot on giving people the ability to stack findings together, to prioritize which ones have to be actioned first, and then to take an action with the result, where that action could be something as simple as cutting a ticket, or as complex as kicking off a remediation workflow.
So what do organizations require these days? Visibility is clearly more important to monitor all that's happening within the organization, but it's not going to solve anything just by having transparency in operations.
Visibility is the first and necessary step in a long process. As you point out, it doesn't solve things. What it does is tell you where you need to look, where you need to work, where you need to focus. And then you have to have the tools in place to actually do the analysis work, to understand what you have, why you're being attacked, who's attacking you, in what ways, and then take the necessary steps to protect yourself appropriately.
What if you, as an organization, have too many accounts to handle? Well, that's where AWS Control Tower comes into play.
Control Tower's job is to set up guardrails. So it's aimed at companies that have a lot of accounts typically. So it's more than one or two, because one or two you can manage by hand. But when you get into the hundreds or thousands of accounts, and some of our customers have tens of thousands of accounts, you need to set up restrictions within a company that help you follow your corporate policies. So for example, I may have a corporate policy that says any account that comes out of the finance organization may not have an S3 bucket that's ever open to the internet. Whereas you may have other rules that say, for example, the only organization that can have open S3 buckets is the marketing organization, because they're pushing stuff out to the public all the time. So it helps you set up rules around your accounts within the structure of an organization, and then it ensures that all of the sub-accounts in that structure follow the rules.
And this year, as you may have heard from my previous show talking about the cloud push into the public sector, has seen a big take-up of new technologies by these public sectors. I asked Stephen, how different is the public sector looking at security compared to enterprises in the private sector?
The public sector conversation is different, typically around the compliance portion of the interaction that we have with them. So in the private sector, the rules around what you can do with data, how you can do it, how you have to secure systems, et cetera, are very dependent on the vertical that somebody is in. So financial services, for example, has some very strict regulation on things, whereas a lot of other businesses have much more relaxed choice on what they want to do. Public sector almost uniformly has very prescriptive, you must do these things kinds of rules. So as a result, we have to ensure that all of our public sector customers can meet the rules that are appropriate in their jurisdiction and in their area. So for example, in the U.S., the U.S. federal government has the FedRAMP standards that we have to meet, and it varies all over the world. Singapore Monetary Authority has their standards that we have to meet, et cetera. The good news is for most of our customers is we don't operate at a lot of different standard levels. We operate at one level across the world. So as we get these higher and higher security bars because of some of these customers out there, everybody gets the advantage of it. I don't change the way I do surveillance of my data center video systems to meet the federal government requirements and then lessen it for somebody else. I always keep it at the same level. And so that's, in some ways, that's very democratizing of security. If you think about it, a small business, they don't have the skills, the ability to do any of this focus on security work that the big guys do, the big companies do. Since we can meet the big companies' security requirements, that really benefits the smaller players out there. I mean, it's really liberating for the fact that my son, who's at university, gets exactly the same security tools that Shell Petroleum does. That's unusual. And it makes me happy as a security practitioner. Anything we can do to raise the overall level of security on the internet is good for all of us.
And that's why we've got a lot of startups as well backing on AWS.
Absolutely. Because it's things they don't have to worry about then. Just like they don't have to worry about racking and stacking servers, there's a certain portion of the security work that we take on for them. Now, it's not everything. And that's a conversation we have with all of our customers, is there's no magic silver bullet, no security unicorn that's going to take care of all of your problems. Depending on the individual service, we're responsible to a certain point, and then the customer gets to make choices above that. So, for example, in EC2, we take care of security up to the hypervisor. The customer chooses what operating system they install, the firewall rules they associated with it, the applications they install, etc. Some of the other services, we go higher in the stack. So relational database service, for example. There, we're responsible for the operating system and the application layer itself. We take on more work for the customer.
What's really interesting is seeing how AWS has embedded a security-first mindset into their culture. Many struggle to get employees to think about security as it might be something too technical for them to understand, and it's left to the CTO and his team to handle it. So how do organizations go about this?
It is really a tone that is set from the top, and it's a fun thing when I had to present to the board of directors recently, and one of the questions they asked is, do we have the appropriate executive interest in security in this organization? And I got to answer, of course, yes, as everybody would expect, but I could back it up with data. I said, so how many companies, the CEO, every single week has a meeting set to go over security issues? And we do. Every Friday, Andy spends an hour going through tactical security issues that have happened during the previous week. And in that meeting is all the senior vice presidents in the company. And it is both an opportunity for Andy to keep a good eye on what's going on in the organization, but it's also a wonderful teaching opportunity because we bring in the people who own the organizations that have had the security problems, and they get to hear from Andy firsthand what he thinks about security and the importance he places on it. And that is a tremendous teaching lever because as he passes the message down to those VPs, you know exactly what happens when they get back to the office. They're passing it down on to their teams and so forth. And that's a great way to expand the sort of corporate knowledge about what we expect to have happen.
Why AWS impresses in the security sector is the way they operate without a SOC, a security operations center. Think of a SOC like one of those multi-screen rooms with an overview of everything that's happening and red light flashes whenever there's an error. Something like how Lucius Fox used sonar technology in Batman The Dark Knight.
We're very proud of that fact. It's kind of fun. Whenever people say, can I come tour your SOC? I get to say, yeah, we don't have one, which blows people's minds. But literally, we have one on-call security engineer at a time. That rotates every 4 hours so that we can keep people fresh and interested and focused. And the security engineer who's on call, their job is to babysit the automation. Their job is to make sure that the tools are doing what they need to be doing. So, for example, we are really excited about the fact that a huge percentage of our security tickets are closed by automation alone. It's something I report on regularly. It's about 94.6% of the tickets that we generated during the year we closed without a security engineer touching things. So, for example, our tooling identified a problem. It cut a ticket to the team that was responsible for the problem. The team fixed the problem. The tooling checked to see did they actually fix the problem. If they did, closes the ticket automatically. That's without a security engineer being involved. If you think about a traditional company, that's somebody picks up a phone, makes a phone call, and it involves a lot of people. We had to go that way because of our scale. There is no way we could operate using traditional methods or resources. The other piece of that is I don't want to operate that way because the really good security engineers don't want to be doing the repetitive, dull work. They want to be doing exciting new things that are building new tools and capabilities. And I want to retain the best people. So making that investment in the tooling, the engineering effort that's required there, is useful both to protect the business, to protect the customers, and to keep the good staff.
How much is artificial intelligence involved in security services? Here, Stephen explains.
So if you look at the services that we've launched over the last couple of years, they're very heavily AI or ML focused. So if you look at Amazon Macy, for example, it is a natural language processor-based system that looks into your data and it helps you understand what it's content is and the sensitivity of that content, and then uses an ML engine to understand the behavior of your employees when they're accessing that data. You know, here's your sensitive content, here are the people who have access, and here's how they've accessed that, and alert you if something looks unusual, because it builds a model of what is normal in those circumstances. Similarly, GuardDuty uses a whole bunch of machine learning to establish what is normal for your computers, your machines. Your machines normally talk like this on the internet. And it can tell you something is different now. I don't know if that's bad by definition, but it's different than it was. And then we can enrich that with not only is it different, but we know the machine on the other end of that is a Tor exit node, which may raise your level of suspicion that something unusual is going on.
That was Stephen Smith. He's the Vice President and CISO at AWS, and we'll go for a short break. But when we come back, you'll be hearing my chat with Atlanta. He's the Managing Director, Asia Pacific at AWS, to talk about the push in this region with all these new services that was announced and what services is he excited to see enterprises using in 2019, especially here in this region. You're listening to BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.